This is LI in the AM with Jay Oliver. News, traffic, weather, and more. 1039 LI News Radio.
Are you ready for a little off the record, on the record? And it is just that, Joe Campbell, of course. Campbell, Middleton, and McCormick. Three locations now. That's right. Westbury is the last Friday. Also, of course, we're on Conkma, Bridgehampton. The aforementioned JNC, managing partner of the great firm, voted best firm on the island by many of the business community, the great Campolo, Middleton, and McCormick. CMM, Joseph Nicholas Campolo. Joseph, how are you, sir?
Jay, it's hump day, man. Happy hump day, brother.
Hey, you know, I always mean to tell my staff that. You know, that great commercial, you know, to do it in that voice.
So much.
Oh,
yeah,
my
so much.
God. I love that spot. It's unbelievable. By the way, congratulations. Office in full in Westbury last Friday?
We're great, man. We're rolling, rocking and rolling.
Yeah, that tell you. Every time I read something about you, I mean, you're unbelievable. You're all over the place. You know, the great thing with Stony Brook over 10 years. I mean, that is a wonderful gesture. Wonderful gesture by CMM. I got to tell you, for those who don't know, that's $450,000, I believe, Joe, over 10 years, right? For your alma mater?
Yeah. Yep. We committed the $450,000 over 10 years specifically to designate it to the Stoller Center. And I'll tell you why we picked the Stoller Center. So many great things to give here on Long Island and so many things at the university, but you know, we look for something that really is going to help keep people here on Long Island, help a quality of life for Long Islanders, and give something to the community. And you know what, Jay? Social media, so many people are on their computers and their phones all the time that the arts are dying, and we need to support the arts, and we need the Stoller Center. I went out Saturday night. We went out to an early dinner. We went to the show. It was a wonderful, wonderful show at the Stoller Center Saturday night. You're home in, you know, 15 minutes, no traffic, no city. It's an amazing, amazing amenity here on Long Island, making Long Island a better place to live, making it a better place to raise a family. But if we don't take responsibility for that, it's going to go away. And, you know, as we can see, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about how New York is doing so terribly with tax revenue because businesses are leaving. If the business community doesn't fight itself to make sure that Long Island stays a great place to live, then what are we going to be left with? So we're so very proud of our contribution to the Stoller Center. It's such an important part of this island. They do a great job over there, and we couldn't be more proud.
I agree with you. You know, we have Alan Inkles on, Joe, every year, as you know, with the festival in the summertime film fest. They do it great. They've gotten better and better every year. I love Inkles. And that's one of the positives. You know, we always talk about negativity and everything else. You know, sometimes you have to embrace, you know, what's here. You know, we talk about the HIA and everything else. Well, guess what? Stoller is one of those things over at Stony Brook. You know, you have to embrace it. People are coming from all over the country for a good reason when it comes to that festival. They do a wonderful job. Well done by CMM in general.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Jay.
Awesome, Star. Let's get into a couple of things. Give me the JNC assessment of the State of the Union address last night. You know, I tell you, 82 minutes, Joe. Fascinating television last night.
I tell you. So, had it been any other president other than Donald Trump, the actual economic accomplishments and the state of the economy and the jobs that are being added and everything else, they would be crowning him emperor. You know, but the guy can't help himself, so he has his accomplishments and he's got to take his jabs. You know what I implore people to do, because what I do is, you know, I of course listen to it and watch it, but it's so hard. It's so hard with the clapping. It's so hard to really get a rhythm. But read it. You know, even the New York Times this morning, the Times and the Wall Street Journal, they'll all reprint his speech in full. It's a quick read because you don't have all the silly applause and stuff. But you know, even the New York Times found it hard pressed to criticize him too much about what he had to say. Well, they're going to take their jabs about immigration, because that's the hot button issue right now. But you know, he's said pretty much, in my opinion, he said pretty much the right things. He's a crazy guy. It's a negotiating tactic. I'm not sure, you know, what today brings, but I thought all in all it was, you know, what you would expect of a president. I thought if it was any other president in past history that was had the economy at the place where it is right now, the Dow's over 25,000 again, you know, over 300,000 new jobs. I mean, it's unbelievable what the economy is doing. It would be a totally different ballgame right now in this country.
Listen, I agree. I mean, I felt the same thing. I mean, I thought it was a very positive speech. You know, there's a couple of things. You know, you can't tell the American people about this investigation, you know, how it's become a major distraction. You have to let Mueller finish it. I mean, we've seen the indictments and everything else. You know, he's onto something here. I want to see the finishing touches put on this thing. You can't call for the, you know, pretty much the end of it as far as ending, you know, what America is all about. This is a very important time as far as this probe is concerned. I want to see the final result. You know, quite frankly, he made some great points. I did not like the Pelosi optic in the background all the time. You know, the smirks and the sneers and the picking up of the pages. As Jeff Keogh said prior, you know, it looked like she was picking up a dinner menu after the fact as far as what to have. I mean, my goodness, you know, enough of that. But what I did like was some of the things he said. I think he made some very key points. And listen, and let's face it, I don't think he's going to get the money for the wall yet. I don't think there will be a second shutdown a week from Friday either. But I thought some very good points lined up in all. I thought the testimonials were fantastic. You know, listen, you have to point out the fact of the family of the 80-year-old couple who were killed in Nevada. I'm sorry, you have to. I thought that was an excellent testimonial and really accentuated the point of shoring up the borders. We can't afford to anymore of allowing people in a legal fashion to come in with only one thought in mind to create mayhem. That's it. Enough is enough. We have to do something about it. Whether it's going to be a steel wall, I don't know if that's the full answer, but we have to shore up points of entry and everything else. We have a huge problem with that. I said this a million times, Joe, on a company Miners Act. We still have not cemented that in stone. That's what happens with these gang members. They come in, they get thrown out, and they're back in again. There's things we can do here outside of putting up steel barriers, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the I think that the strongest point that Trump made with regard to that, Jay, is the strongest point that I hear people make with regards to gun control. And that is, you know, it's very difficult for particularly elite politicians who have armed guards and live behind gated communities and in secure buildings and have security round the clock. It's very hard for me to stomach them talking about, you know, what the rest of the world needs to be secure. Oh, they don't need a wall. You know, normal Americans who don't live with armed security guards and don't have gated communities, they don't need walls to protect them. They don't need that. Well, you know, then get rid of your armed security. Get rid of your gated communities. Get rid of all the metal detectors and everything that has to go on when you go into the Capitol. You know, they would feel a lot more vulnerable if they didn't have all those protections. And so it's very difficult for me, and I'm sure it's very difficult for a lot of people, to understand how somebody in that position, that elite position with so much security and so much protection in their world, can talk about, you know, what the rest of America needs to be secure. And we don't need a wall, and we don't need a barrier, and we don't need anything. To me, that's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous statement. You know, I mentioned it before. You know, take your front door off your house then. If you don't need a wall, take your front door off your house. I don't understand. We need border security. Let's have a conversation. Let's stop trying to pretend we don't need border security. And get out of your elite ivory towers and stop having these conversations behind security with armed guards protecting you. Come into real America. Real America, we don't know who's out there. We don't know who's on the subways with us. We don't know. You can't even – you get cut off nowadays, Jay, even here on Long Island. When you're driving on Sunrise Highway, they're shooting at each other. You get cut off and you can't even stop because you don't know if it's a gang member who's going to shoot at you. I was reading the paper over the weekend, these poor people that are getting shot on Sunrise Highway. I mean, that's real America. I don't have armed guards. I don't have a caravan. I don't have gated communities. I'm depending on you, government, to protect me. So don't lecture us about what we need for security. You know, security is paramount. Security, and whether Trump's, you know, playing this wall to his base and it was a campaign promise, I don't really care. What I care about is that we're secure. We live in a bubble here in the United States. We're so lucky. You know, we have the right to quibble about little freedoms that other countries can't even imagine because of our safety and our security. And our economy will tank, and our quality of life will tank if we're not secure. So I'm so tired, and I thought Trump finally made that point last night, and he should be really hammering that home, that these elitists lecture to us about what we need to be secure. Well, get rid of their security and get rid of their walls and get rid of their gates and get rid of their metal detectors, and then let's see what they feel about security.
I'm not arguing the point of the fact, immigrants are what built this country. I get it. And there's millions that come in here and do good. The president even stated last night he wants them in, but we can't allow bad people in. We can't allow people to come in here illegally. What's so wrong in saying that? You bring up Sunrise Highway. You bring up the gangs and everything else. We have a drug problem, okay? We need to fix it. We can't have this stuff. MS-13 looms large. That's how we can't blow it off anymore. You know, I don't want to hear this anymore from Democrats stating, you know what, immigrants, they do good things. We have to allow, they have set the standard for this country from way back in time. Nobody's arguing that. But what we are saying is we have to protect the citizens of the United States of America. When is the Chuck Schumers and Nancy Pelosi's of this world going to understand that? That's what I want to know.
It's a political red herring, and you're right on point, Jay. I mean, we are a nation of immigrants. Nobody's denying that. My family came over here in the early 1900s. We're a nation of immigrants. We need immigrants. We need workers. We need doctors. We need high-level people from other countries. We're just not producing enough of them here, and we need those. We know that. But we need people that are going to come here the legal way. I don't think that's silly to say. You know what? I can't just go on a plane and say, you know what? I feel like going to Hong Kong today. There's a flight going to Hong Kong. I'm going to get on that plane, and I'm going to sit there. No, you got to go through a process. You got to go through a TSA. You got to have a ticket. You got to have paid for a ticket. You got to have paid for a seat. You got to go through 15 checkpoints to get on a plane to go somewhere else. That's just to get on a plane. Why are we saying it's any different to come into our country and use our resources? Why should we be letting anybody roam around here that doesn't have any sort of presence here, that doesn't have any sort of accountability, that isn't paying any sort of taxes? It's such a political red herring, it's disgusting. It's silly. They try to make it that people are racist for saying that. I don't think anybody's racist for saying that. Nobody wants to focus on the fact that right now England, the United Kingdom, is having a tremendous, tremendous challenge with their immigration issues, their immigration problems. They're not talking about all the problems they're having over there. They're just making a political issue here. Every single president and presidential candidate for the last 30 years has talked about immigration and the need to do it. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, they all talked about it. So it's silly. This is a perfect example of an issue where we need to sit down and say everybody agrees we have to have some sort of accountability for immigration. What's it going to be? It's a perfect, perfect bipartisan issue. Bipartisan members of Congress should be sitting down and trying to figure out how are we doing this in a safe and humane way. That's it, instead of fighting about it. But again, nobody has a plan.
Nobody has a plan. Well, if you ask Kirsten Gillibrand, she has a plan. She wants to abolish ICE. Boy, did I love the camera on her last night, all regarding these issues. I mean, she wanted a slump in her seat. I'll tell you one thing. Disgraceful performance by Kirsten Gillibrand.
She went nowhere fast, and she's going nowhere fast. I think she realized
that. She's going nowhere. And I'll tell you what I did like, Joe. And, you know, there were just a few moments, but it really kind of, you know, underlines the entire evening to me, in that government works best when there's unity. You know, I loved it when Chuck Schumer stood up and applauded. Even Nancy Pelosi, for that matter, with all the distractions of her, the sneers and the jeers and holding her hand up when the president said something and shaking her head in negative fashion. I still liked it when I saw Democrats, as the camera panned, stood up and applauded. To me, that was a high point of the evening, because to me, that's how accomplishments are made. It's not going to be one-sided. It takes two. That's why we have multiple parties in this country. We have to work in unison. And it's a trickle-down effect. You know, you see in Albany, and we see it in Suffolk County and Nassau. Things are not getting done because there is such a divide. And last night, just a couple of moments I saw where, you know what? If Chuck Schumer could stand up more and applaud in these addresses, this country would be better off, I think.
Yeah, and that's the beauty. What I love about the State of the Union every year, I really do cherish it, because I think it's such an important part of our history, is that's the moment. You know, other countries, if you remember, where North Korea would have its military parades and they show off their missiles and they show off their tanks and they march, their soldiers march and everything else. You know, and that's how these other countries try and show their unity and their power and their strength to the world. We at the United States, we do it differently. The State of the Union is our moment to show the world that notwithstanding any of the day-to-day bickering, notwithstanding any of the day-to-day nonsense that goes on in politics, all of our leaders, sans one, there's only one cabinet member ever set aside in case, God forbid, there's an attack on the State of the Union, but all of our leaders are there and are united. Supreme Court's there, Senate's there, Congress is there, President's there, and they're united for that particular, you know, two-hour period. They're united. That's our military show. That's our strength to the world, is that no matter what, we're divided. And so everybody should be getting up, and everybody should be greeting the President of the United States the way that they do. And it brings me hope. It really brings me a lot of hope to see that every year. We just need more of it. You know, we just need more of it. And I guarantee you, by the end of today, that feeling will go away. But that's been our history. That's always been our history. But it was good to see. I agree with you, and I commend Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi for leading that way last night, because we need that.
You know, I'm always fascinated the aftermath, the comments, and including one individual, you know, who said the speech was nothing but crumpled cookies and dog poop. You know, this Van Jones of CNN just needs to go away, in my opinion. You know, you're telling me this is a guy who campaigned for prison reform and everything else, the whole Alice Johnson testimonial, the drugs and everything else, starting a life, 22 years, did good things behind bars, made herself an example. Can we find something positive out of that? I got to hear Van Jones on the comments. You know, the point is, it's just the divisive nature of the media sometimes. Sorry, it is. You know, when I got to hear that comment, I got to look at, you know, and to me, the Pelosi, Schumer, you know, the whole objective is to go against Trump. That's what it's all about, no matter what. They have a disdain for this president that needs somehow to be evaporated if we're going to do some good things in this country going forward. I'm sorry, but it's stuff like that, you know, you just can't get rid of, it seems, Joe.
Yeah, and I've tried to come off the news. I mean, I won't listen to the news or watch the news for the most part. I've gone back to just reading, you know, different newspapers, because I can't stand the commentary anymore. Jay, it's not news. It's entertainment. They're trying to be entertainment TV. They've picked teams. They've made politics a sport. You know, the Republicans versus the Democrats, which it's not. It's you know, when those two, the Super Bowl is a sport. Politics is not a sport. Politics is supposed to be a group of men and women who get together from different walks of life and try and make everybody's life in America a little bit better. Okay, that's what politics is supposed to become. The media, and especially the cable news stations, have become entertainment stations. They think they're Entertainment Tonight or something, and they've turned it into nonsense. And I won't listen to it. I won't watch it. I don't care what their commentary is. Who are they? Who are these people? What right do they have to talk about what they think, you know, because why? We're so stupid, we don't know what they said. Just give me what was said, and I'll process it and figure out how I feel about it. I don't need these morons telling me how I'm supposed to feel about it, or what their commentary or their bias is, because they like somebody or they don't like somebody. It's ridiculous. I'm sick of it. So I've gone back to good old-fashioned newspapers and reading my news, and I don't want to hear their commentary anymore. I'm sick of it, and I wish more people would just drive their ratings down and get them all off the air. I can't stand it anymore.
Joe can't pull off the record on the record. With that said, Joe, I mean, have we learned our lesson? I mean, what happens on February the 15th? Do we see a second government shutdown, in your opinion?
My prediction would be no, but who knows? I mean, my hope is after last night's speech, people are going to be working fast and furiously. I think the vice president is going to be pushing on Congress hard to come up with some sort of compromise. And I would think the smartest thing both parties could do right now, particularly since so many Democrats are launching their presidential campaign, I think the smartest thing they would do right now would be to try and find some way for compromise, some way to come off of a State of the Union and show some leadership and compromise. But, you know, you got Donald Trump, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, three of the most difficult personalities we've ever had in those positions in politics. And so we'll have to see. Not to mention Mitch McConnell, who, you know, he might be very strong in leadership when it comes to getting Supreme Court justices onto the bench. But other than that, I don't see any leadership coming out of the Senate from Mitch McConnell. So we'll have to see what happens.
Hey, listen, I don't think there will be another one. President sending over 3,700 troops to the southern border. You know what? I find it very hard to believe he will hold hostage again. The 15,000 plus here on the island as far as government workers, I can't see it. To me, with all the problems of the airports and everything else, are you going to have another situation at LaGuardia as far as halting flights? I don't think he could put in jeopardy safety. I don't think it'll happen. I think he sent a message. Somehow, some way, they will avert it. I don't know if you'll have another extension in play, but somehow, some way, I don't see it. So let's keep the fingers crossed there on the 15th, Joe. But I'll tell you one thing. House Democrats are playing a lot of catch-up since this shutdown, no question about it. A lot of catch-up as far as their agenda.
I think that's right, and I think we're starting to see some movement. I'm hoping we see some plans. You know, just to touch on something you said, it's interesting because sending more troops to the border. So what we would prefer, I guess, as a country is to put troops on the border who either can get hurt themselves or can wind up shooting or hurting, you know, people that are trying to cross the border rather than some sort of barrier or a wall. It doesn't make any sense to me that, you know, nobody seems to care that the troops are going there, but they care about a wall. It really just seems sort of cockamamie to me. And, you know, part of the challenge I think we're going to see now, Jay, particularly as we're going to be getting closer and closer to 2020, and we're getting all these presidential candidates on the Democratic side, part of it is going to be, where are we going to see a plan? Where does a plan come out of somebody? Remember, all these people used to publish books about what their plan was if they were elected president, and you'd have all these plans. I don't see any plans. You know, what the challenge and probably what the biggest downside risk I see to having had Donald Trump as president and having him president right now is, you know, the Democrats feel they need somebody who can stand up to Trump. And so they'll just try and go tit for tat with Trump. But again, legislative agendas and planning is what's needed right now. One is I don't want this economy to go away. We do need to look at, you know, ways that we can continue to add these jobs. If we keep adding jobs at $300,000 at a clip, we're running out of people. We're running out of a workforce. So that's the number one reason to get, you know, legislation and get immigration cleaned up so we can get workers that come in here. Second great point is health care. I mean, we have our health care renewal for our firm is coming up in April, Jay. It is astronomical, the raise of prices that they're looking at doing. So now we have to find alternative ways to be able to get people the health care that they need. It's still, you know, that was a huge issue 2 years ago. Nobody's talking about it because immigration has eclipsed it. But one of the biggest challenges small businesses are going to have this year is health care. So I'd love to see what we're going to put in place for that as well.
I agree with you. Healthcare is a huge issue, even in Suffolk, you know, with these unions and putting policies in place. And, you know, that's a major sticking point right now. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, it's something you have to really face head on. I want to move on one more before the break, Joe, and that's this Governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam. I mean, you know, the resignation calls he is facing participating in that yearbook photo in the mid-'80s, you know, saying it wasn't him, you know, then, you know, the Michael Jackson thing, the shoe polish under the eye, you know, and even to the point of comical nature when somebody asked him, oh, Michael Jackson, can you still do the moonwalk, Governor? And he actually contemplated by looking at the stage. I mean, thank goodness his wife was there who pretty much said, you know what, that's inappropriate this point in time. I mean, you got to be kidding me. You know, Ralph Northam needs to take a real good look in the mirror and saying, you know what, for the better of the state, guess what? Need to step aside. You know, the only problem is Lieutenant Governor has some problems of his own from way back, it seems, with some accusations of sexual nature. But in essence, Ralph Northam just needs to go away at this point in time. There's certain lines, Joe, you know, and I was telling my kids this, there's certain lines you just can't cross. My goodness, something like that happened, then you go into politics, and guess what? You're fearing the worst, that something's going to come up, and in today's day and age, it will. But Ralph Northam needs to go away.
Yeah, Jay, the state of Virginia is really, over the last few years, you know, demonstrated, I think, to the country a lot of the challenges that state is facing with racial divides. You know, Virginia's always been sort of a sleeper state. Nobody's really, I think, paid a lot of attention to it. But, you know, then when you have all this white supremacist action and Antifa groups that are converging in Virginia, and now this with the governor, I think the governor has to be smart enough to understand that look, there's a lot of arguments out there. I understand that. Irrespective, if it was him, it wasn't him, he didn't mean it to be racially insensitive. It was just a costume. He dressed up like Michael Jackson. All these things that are there, all these things that aren't there. You know, I think if a state needs to racially divide, you can't have an effective governor, an effective white governor, that has pictures of him in blackface floating around. I just don't think that you can, you know, have that and have him effectively govern for the next 3 years. Now, Virginia is very unique insofar as it's a 4-year term and then you're done. You can run again, but you got to sit out for at least 4 years. You can't have consecutive terms. So this is not a situation where you could say, well, let the voters decide whether he should stay or go at the next election. He's only got 3 years left to be as impactful as he possibly can. And because of that uniqueness, I don't think there's a way he can be impactful. And I understand how terribly disappointing that is for him. I understand it was, you know, it might have been a stupid, drunken thing. But what an idiot. You know, first of all, what an absolute idiot. You know, it's not like he was, you know, a naive high school. This wasn't a high school yearbook. This was, you know, a medical school yearbook. He had gone to VMI. He was a smart guy. He knew he wanted to go into politics. Why would he ever even get into those types of situations where pictures like that were surfacing? How did he not know it was on his yearbook? And, you know, Trump made a funny tweet. I think he tweeted it or he said it, but I'm pretty sure he tweeted it, where he basically said, you know, the Republicans who are running the campaign against him should be sued for negligence for never even uncovering this yearbook, which would have clearly made this guy lose in the general election. I mean, it's floating out there, and we have to clean it up. You know, the state of Virginia needs to know that the person sitting at the helm making the most important decisions has clarity of thought on particular issues, particularly race. And so, you know, he it's a shame. I get it. I get everybody makes mistakes. I get everybody's entitled to be forgiven. Everybody makes mistakes, but not everybody's a governor, and not everybody's a governor in today's day and age. And for the betterment of the people, it's best that he steps down.
For the betterment of the state, there's no question of the people of the state of Virginia. You know, I do think, you know, we sometimes overanalyze this type of stuff. Case in point the other day, I mean, do I have to see a clip of the old Mary Poppins movie with Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke obviously sliding down a chimney of some sort and you're getting, you know, the soot and everything else all over their face? Thus, you know, now we have to equate that to being racist? I mean, come on. I mean, sometimes we're getting a little nutty with this stuff. But when it comes to the, you know, the Ralph Northam situation, and as you say, you know, very properly, 3 years to go, I'm sorry. States aren't going to function properly. Lots of decisions and everything else in play. Can't have that. So, you know, again, you know, we kind of have to look at it properly and not overanalyze, though, in many a situation. Joe, stand by. I'm going to take a quick one here. come right back. Lots more to do, off the record, on the record. The great Joe Campola after this. And we are back at 8:40. Joe Campola, off the record, on the record. Joseph, lots to cover. Can't take extended breaks around here. You know that. You know, I want to jump to the a couple of local things where the Suffolk County executive, I know, announced some panelists to participate in a forum will be on substance use disorders, opioid epidemic. We know it's there. You know, quite frankly, a good thing. What I would like to hear from this county executive, Joe, also is, you know, which way he's going regarding the legalization of recreational marijuana. I still haven't heard one way or another here regarding Pallone's stance. You know, listen, let's face it. We've heard all the reports and everything else. We know about the boom of revenue it's going to produce. Quite frankly, you know, you got to be careful in this county where we lead the state in deaths overdose-wise. Granted, not marijuana, heroin, we know it. But you got to be careful here which way you go. Great to hold these forums and everything else. I still want to look to the local leader as far as which way. Listen, we've seen it in Nassau. Towns opting out already. We've seen it in Mineola. We've seen it in North Hempstead. Others will do as well. We'll follow. I'd like to know what his stance is, though, regarding cannabis.
Yeah, and I'm sure that he will make his stance known publicly. I'm sure he's trying to figure it out as well. I mean, my prediction, Jay, is in the next 10 years it's legal pretty much across the U.S. anyway. It's a domino effect. You know, we've talked about this before. It's a domino effect. If other states, if other counties, if other municipalities have it legal, people are going to be missing out on massive amounts of revenue. And it's going to be, like most things, there'll be a feigned moral stand by our elected officials initially to it, and then long term, it's just something that's going to be legalized once one state. And so many reports are out there that are fascinating to read. I love reading about this stuff because the prediction was the domino effect. Once one state made it legal, the other states had no choice but to ultimately follow. And it will be, you know, it will be interesting to see how the dominoes fall. But if you got Jersey, you got Massachusetts here on the East Coast, and you got Nevada and California on the West Coast, it's hard. You know, the pressures of New York, the pressures of Suffolk County in terms of tax revenues, it's just going to be very hard to be losing people going across the border spending those dollars. It's a terribly difficult decision. Maybe it should be up to a referendum for the people of Suffolk County to vote it and bail out from the elected official's position. I don't know, but pure economics are always going to win in a capitalist society, Jay. Once one municipality makes it legal or one state makes it legal, others have very hard press. They're competing. You know, nobody realizes that governments are basically companies competing with each other. You know, Suffolk County is competing with Nassau County for residents, for businesses, for tax dollars, who's competing with the other counties, and New York State is competing with New Jersey and Pennsylvania and Delaware and Connecticut for revenues and dollars and tourism dollars and people to come here and spend. They're just competing against each other. So if somebody comes out with a new product, if a company comes out with a glitzy new product that they can sell to a lot of consumers and it's profitable, what am I supposed to do, not sell that product? As much as I abhor it, as much as I'm opposed to it, that's the problem. That's going to be the challenge. So I'm interested if Steve is bringing out this panel on opioid addiction to start to lean into a position that he's going to resist legalized cannabis here. I'm interested to see that, if that's the direction it's going in. But I think at the end of the day, as long as it's ultimately legal in neighboring states, New York's going to not have a choice but to legalize it.
To me, you know, Joe, I've said this a million times, to me, it is a gateway drug to worse things. And, you know, let's leave it legal only for medicinal use. Quite frankly, you know, we have a huge problem right here. I think sometimes the governor loses, you know, the facts on it, you know, as far as Long Island is concerned. You know, we lead the way. You know, we've gone through this and still ongoing heroin epidemic here. You know, we're losing kids. You know, to me, we have a problem that needs to be attacked other than the fact that it's going to bring in $3 billion. I don't want to hear it. You know, maybe if you ran the state a little bit better to try and forge ahead with some sort of another stream of revenue, we wouldn't be in a position to say, you know what, we need the money. You know, quite frankly.
Bingo, Jay. Bingo, and I have to touch on that because everybody should know, and I will say this until my dying breath, everybody should know that this governor put us in a terrible, terrible position. Okay, he made this state the most business-unfriendly state it could possibly be, trying to socialize private workforces everywhere, giving every benefit under the sun, raising minimum wage. I'm not opposed to these things in concept, but he gave the business community no say in how it was done. He shoved it down everybody's throats with no floor votes, tacking it on to oppressive bills, right? And then has the nerve to turn around and say, oops, we're a couple of billion dollars short in tax revenue because all these businesses lost. Now I want to legalize marijuana. You see, that's what's really going on here that nobody wants to talk about. He systematically shoved down the throats of business people, making this the most business-unfriendly state it could possibly be, with no voice from the business community, none whatsoever. Okay, and all the state elected officials, the Senate stood by and did nothing while this governor ran roughshod over businesses. Okay, and again, businesses should have had the right to be able to have some sort of say, but they rammed it down our throats. Now businesses are leaving, and now they're saying, okay, taxpayers, we need more revenue, so let's find things like let's open casinos and legalize marijuana. That's what's really going on here. Now, whether you're for it or against it is a different story, but everybody should know how we got here, and that's how we got here.
Look what he's talking about regarding congestion pricing right now. You know, he wants a tax on top of the other taxes. People are going to the city. I mean, you can't do it anymore. 11 for a car and 25 for a truck. Find another way. Find another way to alleviate. There are ways, okay? It's just another, Joe, exactly right. You look at the entire portrait, okay? This is what it's come down to. Finding ways to rip people off, finding ways to add more revenue because of failed policies. We see it all over the place. We see it in Suffolk County as well. Suffolk with the taxes on top of the other taxes. You know, the red light cameras still can't be straightened out. Park fees, motel fees. It goes on and on and on here. Mortgage fees, Joe. I mean, how much more can you tax people? We live in a state right now of dire proportions. We got the salt stuff coming into play. Right now, you have bipartisan stuff going on between Congressman Twazi and King. They're trying to alleviate it and properly, hopefully, it'll come to fruition. Who knows? But right now, it is a huge problem. People can't afford to stay here. Therefore, you know, you're trying to find ways, you know, to somehow streamline some sort of revenue. It's terrible. Listen, it's a trickle down. We know it.
Yeah, and you know, if you are not supporting the businesses in your state as chief executive, then what do you think is going to happen? You're going to run out of tax revenue because businesses are going to leave. People are going to leave. They can't afford to live here anymore. And it's been on the backs of businesses for so long. And every single time it drives me absolutely crazy when I see the governor so proud that another piece of legislation has been passed that's going to put the burden on the businesses here in the state of New York. What doesn't he understand? You know, at our firm, We take very, very good care of our employees. Why? Because they do a good job for us and they do a good job for our clients, and we want to remain competitive. And we know in order to remain competitive, we have to take care of our employees. That's the whole point of a capitalist system. I don't need the government telling me what we need to do. My partners and I sit down and say, what's the best way for us to keep everybody happy here, to be fair, to reward our employees, to make sure they have a quality of life, to make sure that they can live here on Long Island? How can we best do that? A governor, any governor, but a governor who's never worked in the private sector, never run a business, never had to sweat a payroll, never had to worry about collecting receivables, never had to worry about making a sale to be able to get revenue to make the next payroll, never had to worry about any of that, all of a sudden is going to dictate again from an ivory tower about how businesses should run and what's best for businesses. It drives me absolutely crazy with no consultation from the business community. You know, we talk about the HIA, Jay. The HIA, second largest industrial park, second to Silicon Valley. We get asked nothing from Albany about what we think the impact of certain legislation would look like on small businesses. The highest hub of manufacturers in the Northeast, here in Hopog, we get asked nothing about minimum wage legislation. Nothing about any of this. So what do we expect?
I'll tell you, and I blame the voters. I blame the public because we elect this dreck year after year after year. When is it going to stop? My goodness. Listen, Cuomo didn't deserve another term. He didn't. The state is in disarray beyond belief, and we award him again. It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable that a new voice can't be heard. But it's the same dreck that we drum up all over again, whether it be 2, 4 years, whatever. It's the same stuff. People, you know, we talk about term limitations. You don't need them. You have the right when you go to the polls in November to vote on a guy if he's done a good job to continue. And we seem to lose focus on that time after time after time. And I wonder, Joe, I'll tell you, for as long as I'm in this position, that's the one thing that has always baffled me, is that we elect these people that have done nothing, that have dug us deeper and deeper and deeper into dog poop year after year after year, and it doesn't end. And you wonder when we will have the faculties to kind of make sense in order to elect the right people.
Totally agree. I mean, we sit around, we shake our heads, and then we just go back to our little existences as if none of it matters, and here we are, and it does matter. And people need to understand, and people need to wake up. You know, Andrew Cuomo won another term as governor because Donald Trump was president, and the media has been all over Donald Trump and stayed away from the horrible, horrible policies that have gone on here in New York. You know, the Senate did nothing to stop Andrew Cuomo when they had a Republican Senate. And guess what? We don't have a Republican Senate. No checks and balances here in the state of New York. We are in significant, significant financial trouble. And so here we go. Here we go. Now it's going to be, oops, we're billions of dollars short. Where do we get other revenue from? And you're going to find all sorts of new things that are going to go on now that the governor's unchecked. It's a terrible situation. It's a terrible situation that New York's gotten itself into.
And this whole thing regarding protections for student loan borrowers, you know, listen, we have a terrible, you know, the problem is of astronomical proportions. In the trillions of dollars it will be. I forget the number exactly in the next couple of years, Joe. But, you know, and this whole thing, yeah, we have to protect these kids. They're coming out. They're getting hit with the bills. They don't even have the job to pay for it yet. My goodness. But quite frankly, you know, we have to do a better job here. You don't tell me about free college tuition and everything else. I mean, we can't. We have to pretty much, you know, look after the people that are in this country who pay the taxes, who do everything right, families who do it right, want to send their kids to a better way. And yet we got to hear about, you know, the free tuition and everything else, the immigrants and everything. Come on, I don't want to hear it. But, yeah, we do need to protect as far as these loans are concerned.
Well, the entire higher education system needs to change, Jay. I mean, let's face it, the entire higher education system is broken. These kids are spending, you know, $62,000, $65,000 a year to go to a school to get a liberal arts education that teaches them really no basic life skills, none whatsoever. It's the thing that drives me the most crazy. Send them to law school after that. You know, what I tell our young lawyers all the time, Jay, is you pay $250,000 to a school, okay, to give you an opportunity to get you a job, and now I have to pay you to teach you how to be a lawyer. So they pay a school $250,000 to do nothing, to not learn how to be a lawyer. They don't learn how to be a lawyer in law school. It's just a rite of passage for those schools to get their $250,000. And now I have to pay these people, these new graduates, and teach them how to be a lawyer. It's crazy. It's the same thing with college graduates. You pay $250,000 to go to college, and then the employer has to teach them how to work, what to do in a job. The entire higher education system needs to be revamped and retooled. We need to bring in more practical skills school, more apprenticeship, more training, more practical education, so that these students, when they come out, if they have debt at all, because it has to be reasonably priced, if they have debt at all, they have a job that they can pay it back with. So what good is it for a kid to have $250,000 in debt and get a job making $35,000 a year? What chance do they ever have of digging themselves out, buying a home one day and living the American dream? They just live under the guillotine their entire life. So it's not going to be where, you know, free tuition. Free tuition is not the answer whatsoever. It's the worst proposal out there right now. The right answer is getting these universities to embrace the free market and say, you know what, we're not producing a product that has value at the end of it. We need to change our curriculum and give these kids life skills so they can go out there and make higher paying jobs and be able to withstand the cost of college tuition. That's how the market needs to work in that regard.
Joey, it even starts in the high schools, I think. You know, we have to be better prepared with these counselors to really advise better, you know, to kind of formulate a plan for a student rather than pick out high-priced universities just because of the name. You know, let's face it, sometimes we go about that. We don't think about the long-term effect. What happens when a kid leaves? You know what? Guess what? Here come the bills. And guess what? They're working at meat farms. Does that make sense? No. We got to do a better job somehow in preparation. Too many kids like that, Joe. A couple of minutes left, my friend. We've got a lot happening on the CMM front. You got the new digs now in Westbury. That's wonderful. I love the fact in a couple of weeks you got the whole Jack Welch deal. Talk about that a sec.
You know, winning. Our theme this year, Jay, at CMM is leadership and ownership. You know, everything we do, everything we talk about, everything that I want to talk about is what leadership means and what ownership means. And there's no better example recently in the business community than Jack Welch in terms of leadership and ownership. I mean, if you look at what Jack did with GE over a 30-year span as CEO, is unbelievably amazing. And all he did was preach to his employees, you have to be leaders and you have to treat this company like you own it. You have to have ownership. And so that's our theme. That's our theme, what we want to help roll out to the Long Island business community. And there's been a huge, huge, huge reception by the business community. I think people are starving for leadership in their own organizations as well. You know, we got to keep the workforce moving. We got to keep them motivated. So we're pretty excited about the aggressive agenda for our business series this year.
So you do it better than anyone. You know, the one in March, the East End Business Breakfast, leading your business the Marine Corps way. Everyone knows Joe, a part of that wonderful situation way back. You're going to be in Southampton, I believe, on that one, end of March, right?
Yeah, so we did it. We did it here. We did it here in Hop Hog a couple weeks ago. We got over 150 business leaders and governmental leaders. I was proud to see Tim Sweeney's senior leadership team there as well, mixing it up with the business community. That was very good to see. And because of that, we got a lot of East End folks that were asking us to reproduce it out there. It's going to be a huge production out in Southampton. So we're pretty excited about that.
It's great stuff. And, of course, you know, Westbury. Now the CMM force, folks, across the spine of Long Island is CMM. And I got to tell you, Nassau is only, listen, they're going to embrace it. I know they will. That's great to be in the county, though.
Yeah, we're very excited. Very, very excited to be able to service Long Island the way we have been.
Well, listen, with all the great events coming up, we'll talk more. I'll have Joe back in a couple of weeks. You can make a phone call, 738-9100. At 631-738-9100. CMMLLP.com, folks. Go on that site and learn more on this wonderful firm. Best on the island, hands down. And it was voted that way by many within the business community. So check it out. The great Campolo, Middleton and McCormick. The great Joseph Nicholas Campolo. It is always a pleasure, sir. I look forward to talking with you in the next go-around.
All right, brother. We'll talk again soon.